fucking Bruce Lee set?
No. I didn't have a root tortoise.
Give me your damn Bruce Lee set, man. That's bullcrap. You have that. Let me borrow it then.
Edwin, who taught you your style of trying to persuade people to give you things?
It's working. I just mailed you.
Jersey and and other mafia movies.
Honestly, effective.
Or we just go to the Reservoir Dog way, tie you to a chair and cut off your ear.
That's, I mean, kind of my kink. So bring the noise.
Well, you will enjoy it. Then Connor will sit there and watch.
Oh, you are elevating this to where I want it to be.
Welcome, Secret Movie Clubbers, to Secret Movie Club Podcast 19. Today, we are going to be talking about great movie twists, of which we're going to define them as great twist endings, but also twists can happen in the plot, so they can be plot twists. We're going to be talking about both. So as just a warning right at the start, we made the executive decision that in order to make this a good podcast, we really are going to have to dig into the specifics of the twist. So if you do not want to hear any twists yet, please go and look. We're going to name all the movies we talk about, and we're going to give you the time code that we talk about them. And you can just check in on the ones that you've seen or you don't mind the spoiling. Otherwise, if you're not bothered by that, hopefully we want to make this a great, entertaining, nutritious dialogue. We are actually also going to start by talking about the 1973 horror classic The Wicker Man, directed by Robin Hardy, written by Peter Schaefer. Is it Peter or Anthony? Because we were corrected by Kim.
Anthony
Schaefer. Forgive me, guys. I should have had this here. I learned during our Netflix watch party that there are Schaefer brothers. And the Schaefer who wrote Wicker Man wrote Sleuth as well. And then the Schaefer who wrote Equus also wrote Amadeus. I thought they were one person. Twist, they're brothers. So anyway, just so you know. And thank you, Kim Zuckert, for correcting me on that. Here are some announcements. But actually, before I do the announcements, Edwin, I'm glad you're back. You met Conan O'Brien this week.
Yeah, I met Conan, bro.
That was huge.
I know, man. I was going to In and Out to get something to eat, and in a corner left of my eye I see a man, and like, oh my god, it's Conan, and I shout out his name. He heard me, he waved, and like, you know what, I have to go back. I know I will never get this moment again. I went back and I politely asked Conan, hey man, can I have a picture of you? He's like my favorite talk show host of all time. Took a picture of him. Greatest moment of my life. Went to In-N-Out, went home, went to the park, had a doobie, and I watched Mark Conan. That was a great moment in my life.
Well, there you go.
It's the most SoCal story I've ever heard.
I know.
I love that.
Edwin, I'm so proud of you. That was huge.
I know.
He's like three times your height.
That dude's tall. He's tall.
He's very tall.
I don't know. He does, man. He's tall.
He uses a rack.
So here are the announcements. We are recording this the week of July 20th. This weekend, Saturday, we are going to do a Hindi classic, also known as the Bollywood classics. We're going to do a movie called Amar, Akbar, and Anthony, starring one of the world's greatest stars, Amitabh Bachchan. He is one of the greats. He's going to be in this movie. We're going to do it at 7:30 on Saturday. It's our Netflix watch party. You can just go to Eventbrite Secret Movie Club, or just go to secretmovieclub.com or our Facebook page, and it's donation-based, so donate whatever you can. We would love to have you. We'll provide the deep dish trivia, but really you're just going to experience a Bollywood movie, which is unexplainable. You just have to. It's got music, action, adventure, comedy, melodrama, 3 hours long, usually a 40-minute prologue that has almost nothing to do with the body of the movie that's still amazing. Your mind will be blown, and this one is one of the greats. Anyway, moving on. Also, next Wednesday, July 29th, our Secret Movie Club Radio Hour Episode 2 will launch. This one is called Diner, written and directed by Secret Movie Club's own Connor Lloyd Cruz. Connor, anything you want to say?
No.
So, it is a lot of fun. It all takes place in a Texas diner, and it revolves around a murder and a colorful cast of possible suspects. Listen to it, please. July 29th, we'll launch it at 1 p.m. And then our last update, you know this, I don't need to tell you, the United States response to COVID has not been what we all would have hoped. So we all learned today that Tenet has now officially moved from opening August 13th to opening eminently, which basically means when they probably feel like it's a good money decision to open it. So therefore, in terms of going back to live events, we have committed to doing drive-in events for the time being. I will announce that here. So please, look for our announcement. We're going to make a big announcement for next Monday at 1 p.m., but we are going to go back to live events. It will be COVID-friendly. I'm not friendly to the disease, but friendly to you. How can I say that differently?
Unfriendly to COVID.
Totally, yeah. We are going to do this. Yeah, we're doing this the right way. Cars are going to be spaced out. We are going to have our face masks and gloves. We're going to have hand sanitizers. We are going to do great double features and a really cool outdoor location. We're going to be providing a lot of fun stuff. And you know what? F this. We're going back to watching movies, but we're going to do it outside where people can be in their cars. You can all be safe. And that's probably our biggest announcement. And look for our announcement probably Monday at 1 p.m. would be my guess, July 27th. So if you have any suggestions, comments, criticisms, you can write us at community@secretmovieclub.com or podcast@secretmovieclub.com. We will all read them. There we go. Let's move on. Main topic.
Have we? I don't think we've introduced ourselves yet.
Oh, F, man. Today is just slapdash, vice versa, it's and upside
real,
down.
It's a real twisty episode.
Yeah. So who's with us? Twist. Who's with us on this episode today?
Hey, it's me, Connor Lloyd Cruz.
What?
Oh, man, I was gonna do that bit. But I was gonna do it like it's me, Conrad Gumbledis. Just kidding. It's actually Connor. Surprise.
Yeah, it's Daniel. You know, they can't tell who. Yeah, it's me, Daniel. Hello.
It's a great Nicolas Cage back at it again, talking about the Wicker Man. My Wicker Man, not some British movie that came out of the 70s. Okay.
And actually, twist, we're not talking about the Nicolas Cage Wicker Man. We are talking about the British movie that came out in the 70s, directed by Robin Hardy. Starring Edward Woodward and Christopher Lee. My name is Craig. I'm the founder programmer. Edwin, props to your Nick Cage. You can take it home.
We're
finish
talking
it
about the Wicker Man. We're talking about my Wicker Man. Okay? This entire podcast is now my. We're talking about my okay.
Guess
Wicker
what?
Man.
Guess what? Nick? No, we're not. So, moving on. We are going to be talking about twist endings, plot twists, but we're going to start by talking about really just one of the great cult horror movies and also one of the great twists. If you ever do that, like Google great movie twists, Wicker Man is almost always in there with The Sixth Sense and Planet of the Apes, you know, any number of twists, which we'll talk about.
It's legitimately one of my favorite films ever. It's either five or six, like in my top 10. I adore this film.
And a lot of people did. We had a lot of first timers Saturday and they were eating it up and they were loving it. So the 1973 Wicker Man, directed by Robin Hardy, starring Christopher Lee and Edward Woodward and Britt Eklund, and written by one of the Schaefer brothers, I want to get it right, who also wrote Sleuth. Basically, the premise of the movie is that a very uptight and rigid mainland Christian police detective goes to a Scottish island to investigate the disappearance of a 12-year-old girl and discovers that the island is basically... everyone there practices some kind of pagan cult religion, which totally predates Christianity, has free love, you know, everything that would make this uptight police captain detective even more uptight. And the person who runs the island that everybody answers to is the great Christopher Lee in one of his first non-Hammer roles. And as the police detective gets deeper and deeper into the mystery, things get way more unsettling and it builds to an amazing twist ending, which we will talk about.
Yeah, I love this movie. I saw it for the first time less than 10 years ago, more than 5 years ago. I'm mostly familiar with the final cut, which we can talk about the cuts if we wanted to in a second.
Oh, but yeah, we weirdly watched on Netflix the theatrical cut, which ran about 89 minutes.
Yeah, it's still a great movie. Any cut of it is really good. And it's just so weird and mysterious. And I think my favorite thing about it is the fact, and this was the most surprising thing going in, because I kind of, when I watched it the first time, kind of knew what was going to happen. What I didn't know is that it's a musical. Most of it's diegetic. as in it's in the context of the world. It's not like a Martin Scorsese movie. We're just playing on the soundtrack. But there's something really interesting about that. And that music is just so good and hypnotizing.
One of the fascinating things talking about the musicality is that oftentimes in most movies where there is music that the characters sing in the scene, like you're saying, Connor, it's at best kind of forgettable. Mm-hmm. And just to your point, all the songs in the movie are great. And I was reading that they had a huge influence on British pop all the way up through like Damon Albarn and the Gorillaz and like the 90s Brit pop rock explosion that it like Jarvis Cocker. Everybody knows The Wicker Man. It's funny how many risks the movie takes. You know, Christopher Lee in a non-Dracula role.
He apparently, this was like his favorite. I don't know if, I don't remember when this quote was from exactly. Part of me thinks it might be pre-Lord of the Rings.
Oh, I'd never seen this. This was a blind spot. I've seen the Nick Cage version, and I've seen, I feel like, 100 movies that this inspired. But it really surprised me. I really loved it. And I think part of that stems from the use of music, because I expected it, because I don't know how you'd classify it. It's like a horror, mystery, musical sort of trifecta. And I thought the music would be used for like creepy sake, as a lot of modern horror kind of, you know, Insidious uses
Tiny Tim.
Yeah, he uses Tiny Tim to sort of unsettle you. But I found the music in this to be more disorienting than creepy, because the songs were good. And I think it's supposed to disorient you into the culture of this island. Versus try and make you feel, I mean, it makes you feel uneasy maybe, but it doesn't try to be like scary, which I thought was surprised me.
And it makes sense as like part of their culture. It doesn't feel like it exists just to creep people out.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't feel weird for weird's sake. It feels like something these people have lived in and they're involved in, which I think is kind of hard to pull off. And I think things that I've seen that have borrowed from The Wicker Man maybe lose sight of that. I think of Ben Wheatley's Kill List from like 2011. And he has a lot of Wicker Man vibes in that, but all of the music, these chanting voices sort of exist to be creepy rather than feel like this lived-in society that's just unknown to us. Lee, I think, is the lifeblood of this, and I wonder if his Hammer film background coming into this is the reason why, because he understands the line between like that little bit of cheeky kind of B-movie sensibility, but also complete sincerity, because if you don't have the sincerity to the end, the movie would fall apart.
You know, and if you see interviews, Lee had nothing but the utmost respect for the writer and the director. So I think you're seeing an actor not like just taking a paycheck or hamming it up. I mean, he really is being Lord Summerisle, and you believe that would be that character.
It's so subtle.
There's like this 5% of him that you can tell is manipulating Edward Woodward, you know what I mean? Like truly, like in the background. I mean, obviously getting to the twist in a little bit, he's 100% manipulating him, but he only gives it away a little bit. Because the twist isn't that they're going to kill someone, it's who they're going to kill. The mystery is you finding out over the course of the film, just going into it a little bit more as we're talking about it. As the film goes on, this girl that he went there to find, it seems like they were going to sacrifice her. And then the twist is who they're really going to sacrifice.
It was f***ing weird. It was weird. It's probably one of the weirdest British horror movies I've ever seen. And I've seen a couple of horror films, but from the great UK. But that one was like, was it intentional to be a musical? I mean,
yes.
That was some... Okay, it was. Okay, that makes sense. That's some very cool landscape shots and very good cinematography work, but I don't think I'll watch it again.
And what was it that weirded you out in a not fun way?
Everything. Everything about it. It was like San Francisco in the 60s, man, but it's a pagan cult.
The musical numbers for sure are strange because they're constant. I mean, you might almost say that 50% of the movie is musical, at least. 50% of the movie is sung. I told this story during the watch party, but I was in London. I lived in Prague when I was 19, and I saved up all my money from my lunch stipends because I didn't have any money. And I bought a Eurorail pass so that I could see Europe. And I went and visited a friend who also went to my college, but he was back home in London. And I went to go visit him, and he was just a really cool guy who, like, always had girlfriends and things going on. And I think one day he just sort of wanted to, like, do his own thing. So he was like, you've got to see The Wicker Man. It's amazing. I happen to have it here at my house. So he pulled The Wicker Man, but I think maybe he just wanted 3 hours to himself. So I watched The Wicker Man at his house, and I didn't know what to expect. And I loved it. But what I loved truly, and this is something I'm always partial to, is I love the themes. So I love this script about somebody who is really uptight in kind of a fundamentalist religious way, who clearly, like, you know, the police investigator, for people who haven't seen the movie, Detective Howie, we're told pretty early on he's engaged. He's a very committed Protestant Christian who has not had sex. He's waiting for married to get married. And he's also, I don't know what the word would be, almost puritanical. Like, he's really offended by anything that isn't Judeo-Christian. And so he can't deal with what he's seeing on the island. Like, he's literally the worst person to investigate this.
There's a bit that I love that I was going to bring up, because his performance is also great. When I forget exactly what Christopher Lee says, and then it does that snap zoom as he stands up. He's like, what?
And so I love that theme, because as the movie goes on, as Connor was saying, everybody on the island, this is just their religion. And I really want to get into this, but what I love is, to them, they're as offended by Edward Woodward's Christianity as he is by their paganism. And I think that the movie actually makes this brilliant statement that one person's moral religion is another person's, like, oh my God, that's horrible. And it's true on both sides. So those themes are developed amazingly. And then let's just get into it, guys. So, you know, the twist basically is that Edward Woodward is searching for this missing girl and comes to believe more and more, because it's a pagan cult built on agriculture and abundance, that this girl disappeared during their worst crop. And he's convinced she's going to be sacrificed. Well, twist, at the very end, he disguises himself on their May Day, which is like their Christmas, their harvest day. And there's the girl. He's afraid she's going to be sacrificed. He saves her. But sure enough, when they come out of this cave, everybody is there. Even the girl was in on it. And the real sacrifice is him, the detective, because he is a Christian. He's a virgin. He's perfect for what they need for the sacrifice.
He came of his own free will. He came as a fool because of the costume he's wearing, because of who he's trying to pretending to be. And he came with the power of a king because he was a cop. And then the virgin thing as well.
And there you go. So he fits, like, he checks off everything they need to bring back their abundance in agriculture. And the Wicker Man is this amazing reference to this sort of giant Burning Man statue that they've put all their livestock and agriculture in. And then they put him in. And we watch as he burns and screams to God while they all dance and sing around him, which is really one of the true great payoff endings. Wherever you fall, it's just like horrifying.
That ending is chilling. I mean, you just describing it to me, like, had my hairs on the back of my neck, like, standing up. There's, like, lots of other parts in the movie that are creepy, but that lasts like 10 minutes. It's just, yeah, it's awful.
It's the payoff of all payoffs.
When I look back of it, I think of it as being much more graphic than it really is, because in my mind, I think of, because there's a fire and there's animals and him, and we cut to him inside the Wicker Man gradually catching fire, but you never see anything. You kind of hear some screams and him sort of having his own crisis of faith as he figures out his stuff, and then we cut to them singing outside, and there's an incredible shot at the end where as the head of the Wicker Man falls off in the fire, and it just zooms into the sunset going down on the horizon. Ace in the hole.
Man, that was dark. That was purely dark, and he just, like, praying to God, you know, singing, yelling for, like, dear life, and then boom, gone. And again, I have to give it to the cinematography in the movie is incredible, man. It's incredible. Like, literally, that's just a great ending. That's a really great ending for a horror movie. Like, not too many horror movies like that from the 70s could match that at all. That, to me, was satisfying to me. I loved it.
The writer had felt, Mr. Schaefer had felt, that too many horror films at the time were just leaning on gore for what they considered horror. And so he wanted to challenge himself to make something truly horrifying that didn't really have gore. I would say that he succeeded in spades. I mean, I think that the movie is a textbook in, if you come up with a story and situation, the situational horror is really amazing. And there is no gore.
It is still very explicit.
Yes. There's a lot of nudity. Yeah, a lot of sex. I actually don't think the movie works on the level of his character as a detective, because I think he's the worst detective I've ever seen. And as you watch it, you're like, wait, it does feel a little writerly, because you're like, why would he go without a partner? Why would he not be checking in with the mainland? Why is he not done any of his research about the people he's about to yell at and grill? Like what kind of detective just drops in, no research, onto this island that's hermetically sealed, doesn't understand the culture at all, and then proceeds to be the worst detective I've ever seen by yelling at people and pissing them off and closing off all avenues to clues? I do want to say, however, I have no interest in being part of that pagan cult. So it was funny to listen to some of you, some of the people in the Netflix watch party were like, this is the way to be, man. Like, I want to be on that island. Like, those people are great. Like, free love and music and beer. And I was like, no, F no. These people are slavishly like worshiping this Christopher Lee dude. This thing could go wrong any year. He could finally just be like, hey, y'all got to drink the Kool-Aid, Jim Jones style, and we're all going out. And at the end, when they're all singing there and murdering someone, now listen, every belief structure has hypocrisy. I want to be real clear here. There's plenty of murder and blood on the hands of all world philosophies. And I think the movie is bringing that up a little bit to be like, hey, before you're quick to judgment about this pagan cult, why don't you think about all the blood on the hands of every world religion that uses their religion to justify murdering a minority or murdering whoever? I just want to say I tend to be an independent in a lot of ways, and I have no desire to be part of that pagan cult. I think they're just as effed up. I have no desire to be on that island with Lord Summerall at all. And I find everything horrifying and chilling. That's me.
I mean, I think I might have been saying some of that stuff, but I was probably saying it semi-ironically. I think there are aspects of that that I find interesting. Obviously, I wouldn't be down for the killing somebody. The real irony of the Willow song sequence, which is a sequence where this woman in town who's this sort of well-known for sexuality and for... It seems to be this like ritual where whenever a boy turns into a man, they take the boy to her and she takes his virginity. It seems to be what the implication is. And then there's this song that the people in the pub play while it's happening. And Christopher Lee talks about some snails and it's really good. And then on the second night in the theatrical cut, it's on the first night, which is a little strange. I think it works better on the second night because there's been more tension rising with Howie and all this stuff around him. The second night she sings a song to him through the wall at the pub, known as Willow's Song, because that's her character's name, trying to seduce him. And, you know, we find out at the end that the reason he was such a powerful sacrifice is because he was a virgin and he didn't sleep with her because of his Christianity. But that's the thing, is if he had slept with her, he would have gotten away. You know what I mean? Like, if he hadn't if he hadn't kept so strictly to all these things, his undoing was, you know, exactly what you're saying, like going so far the other way.
Being dogmatic
and not being reasonable and approaching these, not necessarily having to, you know, have sex with Willow, but that would have done it also.
So the movie, as everyone is sort of hinting at, and I would want to just say, it's incredibly complex and resonant. And I think we could talk for another 2 hours about it, 3 hours, 4 hours. So that's the kind of horror that I love. Let's talk about another movie of yours that you think is a great twist, and it could either be a twist ending or a plot twist. So I will kick it off, because it's easy for me because I did a whole blog series this last week on twists. There's so many different kinds of twists, but I guess maybe sticking right now with the twist ending, one of my favorite twist endings of all time is in Alejandro Amenábar's The Others, which is this great movie, ghost story with Nicole Kidman from 2000-2001. So it's recent. I highly recommend everybody sees it. I am going to spoil it. So if you don't want to hear it and you haven't seen it, then you're going to want to look at our time code and move forward. The basic setup is there's this mom, and it's World War One. I think maybe between World War One and World War Two, although it could be after World War Two. She's got two children, and she's moved to the countryside in this really gothic house, and the daughter and son think that the house is haunted. Well, the mom is like, her husband is missing in the war, she's got these kids, she's just trying to get by. As the movie goes on, you know something's wrong. Like, something doesn't make sense cinematically to you. There's a lot of fog that surrounds the house. The Nicole Kidman seems just totally preoccupied, and then her husband shows up. And he's really weird and zonked out. And you think, like, man, he might have PTSD. What's going on with him? Where's he been? Then he disappears. Well, twist, at the very end, the kids hide in a closet because they think the ghost is going to, like, you know, visit them in this closet. Suddenly the door is open and there's this freaky woman and you're like, oh, it's the ghost. But it actually turns out to be a medium. And you learn in that moment the kids are the ghosts and Nicole Kidman is the ghost. And they are the ones in the house and they've been dead and they don't realize it. And so the ghosts that they think are actually the living people in the house. And it's just, yeah, it's so good.
Well, speaking of twists, that if done poorly would be ridiculous and totally tank their entire movie. I want to talk about Serenity from last year, which has a midpoint twist. It's not a twist ending. Serenity is a movie starring Matthew McConaughey and Anne Hathaway, and what's that guy's name? Jason Clarke, and a couple other people. Matthew McConaughey is playing a very Matthew McConaughey role. He's like this fisherman in this like little village, or this little like island community. He's trying to catch an evasive giant yellowfin tuna whom he calls Justice. And and he's like a hard drinker and he's like having sex with Diane Lane and she's paying him. And it's like the first half alone is already incredible from this like kind of over the top schlock sort of thing, but in like a really fun way. I enjoyed this movie immensely. This was actually legitimately one of my favorite movies last year. I got to see it with Daniel, which Daniel, did you know before going in?
I had no idea.
He had no idea. And then our friends, Lisey and Casey also had no idea. I remember how mad they were. Because as the movie goes on, Anne Hathaway comes to visit with Jason Clarke. And Anne Hathaway used to be married to Matthew McConaughey. And it's implied that they had like a kid, but something happened. And then Anne Hathaway wants Matthew McConaughey to kill Jason Clarke, to take him out on a fishing trip and kill him. But you find out about halfway through that the whole thing is a video game. Which...
What?
Yep.
How?
The whole thing is a video game. The whole thing is a video game.
Designed by who?
This is what the last half of the movie teases out. Apparently it was a video game. Apparently Matthew McConaughey's dead in real life. And it was made by his son, the son of Anne Hathaway and Matthew McConaughey, as like a fishing simulator to hang out with his dad. Because you know how kids who love to program are also really into fishing simulators. Then I guess Jason Clarke comes in and he, or someone like him in real life and his abusive.
Oh, stepdad.
Apparently in real life as well. And so he sort of programs it into it and he's trying to like force Matthew McConaughey to kill. So there's all this stuff that doesn't really make sense where it's like you're going against the programming. But if he's wanting you to do it, that doesn't really make sense. But anyways, at the end of the film, it's implied that Matthew McConaughey having, I guess, the courage to kill Jason Clarke leads the kid, and like the ending is like some implication where it's like Patrick, that's the kid, summons up the courage to confront Frank in real life and stabs him in the chest with a knife that used to belong to his father. Frank dies and Patrick is charged with murder, but he is released into his mother's custody while awaiting trial. He designs a new computer game in which he and his father are reunited. Whoa. And it's incredible. I mean, it's very misguided. I like good bad stuff, but I kind of hate calling it that because I love the weird imagination here. But it definitely is not, the things that it evokes in you are not the reactions that it's going for. But it's definitely, it gets something out of you. It's a lot. It's
Serenity.
You know, there's a lot of great twists, you know, like great M. Night Shyamalan, you know, he's a master of twists until the village happened. But I'm not talking about Shyamalan. I'm talking about Bryan Singer's The Usual Suspects.
Sure, considered at the time in the 90s, that twist was considered one of the great twists. So go for it.
Bryan Singer and Kevin Spacey, two great tastes that taste great together.
This is another movie. If you've been reading my trailers, this is another movie I actually saw at my grandmother's house. You know, I spent a lot of my weekends there watching movies and relaxing.
Was your grandmother monitoring what you were watching at all or no?
No, I usually stay up late in the living room when everyone goes to sleep. So I just started watching a movie I love it by the far. It's one, probably my favorite crime movies of all time. But once you get to that ending, and once you know the detective start to realize everything he sees on his wall, and where Kevin Spacey leaves the police station, and then he suddenly walks normally, and like, wait, what? Oh my god, he's Kaiser Soze? What? That to me is probably one of the greatest endings, and one of the greatest twists, and one of the greatest getaways of all time. And I love the quote at the end of the movie. Like, the greatest trick that the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist. And like that, he's gone.
Can I read a sentence real quick from the Serenity Wikipedia page, and we can cut this? It's really short. It just says, in the production section, McConaughey and Hathaway hadn't acted together since Interstellar. Oh, since Interstellar? Whoa. That long? Thanks, Wikipedia.
It's the only leaked trivia about it.
It's been that long since Interstellar.
There you go, guys. Wow. If you've been itching for that McConaughey Hathaway reunion.
My first twisty boy decision is the 2003 South Korean flick Old Boy.
Of course it is.
Directed by Park Chan-wook.
Oh yeah. Major twist.
I got a bootleg of this from a friend when I was maybe 14 or 15. The setup is there's a man named Odae-soo, and he is kidnapped in the first few minutes of the movie, and he's held captive for 15 years, and you get no answers of why. He's in this hotel room, and he attempts to kill himself multiple times, but he's always brought back to health, and he's fed, but he's just given no answers. So he is allowed to exist in this room with the television, and just life goes on, and he is stuck there. And then one day he's just released, has no idea why. And so he goes on a revenge quest to find why. And along the way, he meets a girl who he falls in love with, a younger girl. It's kind of the first woman he comes into contact with after being locked away for 15 years. As the movie progresses on, you start to learn the backstory of who his captors were and why they've done it to him, and sort of his past of what he had done to deserve it in their eyes. And as you approach the end of the movie, Odae-soo and I think her name is Mi-do finally get to the building where this... Or he at least gets to the building where his captors are. They've basically invited him in. And he's going to get his final revenge. And it's revealed that the girl he's partnered up with and has slept with and has fallen in love with is actually his daughter, who he left behind when he was taken. And the captors have orchestrated that meeting by brainwashing her and, to a degree, brainwashing her and him to meet. They've, you know, planned this entire thing out. And so the movie ends with him going to a hypnotherapist to try and forget that she is his daughter so he can continue on without the guilt of knowing what he knows, but to also just try and live this... Normal's not the word, but try and live a life now that he has gotten his quote-unquote revenge and has the information he has. And then you never really know if he knows or not.
What was his crime in the view of the guy who masterminded his revenge against him?
The villain of the movie who had orchestrated everything, it's revealed that him and his sister had been incestuous, and Odae-soo had seen them, and it spread this rumor. And that rumor had caused the captor's sister... to commit suicide. And so he had decided that, you know, Odae-soo needed to pay for what he did, and he needed 15 years. He basically did that to imprison him, to mess with his mind enough that he could make this plan work out. And my great story to tie that in is when I first met Rachel was my freshman year of film school, and your first major project at the end of the first semester in my film school was to make an homage film to a director, and you had to do a big project on it, and I chose Park Chan-wook. And so I brought my cast and crew to do a triple feature of his Vengeance trilogy. And I invited Rachel, who we were just friends at the time. I invited her to come watch a movie. I told her the times we'd be there, and she showed up for Old Boy. And that movie, I just watched dreading that this girl I liked would associate me with this piece of cinema as my singular taste.
We talked about Audition before. That's probably my second favorite twist behind The Wicker Man. We talked about it on our earlier episodes. I'm not going to say that one because I don't want to spoil it for people, but just be warned that it has very extreme violence involved. And it's not really... What's interesting, that movie is the twist kind of slowly happens. It's like the last half of the movie is this slow reveal of the twist.
Yeah, it's not a twist ending. It's a plot twist.
Yeah. Probably the biggest thing that ever got me was the ending of Split, the M. Night Shyamalan movie, where you find out twist ending, it's in the same universe as Unbreakable. Which kind of means nothing if you haven't seen Unbreakable, but I had no idea going in, and that's Unbreakable is my favorite M. Night Shyamalan movie. The cool thing is also you find out through Split and then the crossover film Glass that the thing that basically all the stuff that happened in Split kind of stems from the same things that happened at the beginning of Unbreakable, that James McAvoy's character was essentially created through a series of events that started with that same incident that Unbreakable begins with. But I want to talk just for briefly about the Saw movies. The Saw movies became famous for their twists, and the first couple are pretty okay. The first one, you find out the guy you thought did it, it's not him. It's actually the dead body in the middle of the room. And the second one, there's a couple things. They keep getting more esoteric until maybe my favorite dumb twist of all time, which is in Saw 4, because these movies don't operate like old slashers, where they kind of reset every time. Each Saw movie has more and more scenes that are just flashbacks of other characters setting up traps in the previous films, to the point where, like, by film 7, it's like half that. It's just like people behind the scenes of things that happened in previous films. And so the twist at the end of Saw 4, and Saw 4 is when that really starts to ramp up, is that this movie has been taking place at the same time as Saw 3. Mind blown. What an incredible twist. The twist works when it works when the story's good. The story will tell you when it needs a twist. Sometimes things that could be twists work better if you just know them. Edwin, you mentioned The Village earlier. I think a lot of people have talked about how The Village would almost maybe work better if you knew about the modern day stuff way earlier. And it was more about like this weird almost cult going on, as opposed to trying to trick you into thinking it, you know, 200 years ago or something.
The Village is a really interesting example of a twist that a lot of people groaned at. A lot of people felt that was Shyamalan. I don't know what the word would be, but it was too much, because M. Night Shyamalan has developed his early career on the twist film because of Sixth Sense. And by the time The Village came around, that twist, well, it is kind of an interesting twist. A lot of people were like, are you kidding me? Like, 2 hours.
It's interesting, though, also, like, there's, like, two twists in that movie, because there's a midpoint twist in that movie where you find out that the
monsters are not monsters.
And that works, you know what I mean? Where the other stuff doesn't as much, because I think it's just executed so poorly. Also, I want to say this real quick about Glass. In the movie, because you know how M. Night has, like, cameos in all his films? So he has a cameo in Unbreakable, and then like 20 years later, he has a cameo in Split. In Glass, he has a cameo that explains that his two cameos, he was the same person.
Whoa. Whoa.
Planet of the Apes. Not the piece of shit remake. I'm talking about the original Planet of the Apes with great Charlton Heston, Ryan McDowell, and Kim Hunter. That is a great twist to me, because we get one of the most iconic shots and the most iconic endings of all time. Charlton Heston not realizing, oh my god, I've been on Earth this whole time. And we get this beautiful line from Charlton Heston. You maniacs! You did it! Damn you all to hell! And we get a shot of the Statue of Liberty. Like, just gone. Another great twist in this Primal Fear with Richard Gere Edward Norton. That was a great twist right there. I didn't see that coming a mile away. I didn't see that.
That twist basically launched Edward Norton's career.
Oh yeah, he got nominated for an Oscar and he should have won. And my least favorite twist is this is a movie I saw at the New Beverly. It was Death Promise. A promise made, a promise kept. That we figure out the mastermind behind the whole movie, but in reality, we could see him in the corner because the lighting was terrible. We could see his face. Like, that's the master in the beginning of the movie. We know he's the bad guy because someone didn't do their lighting right. And he's just there stroking his cat. And once he revealed himself, I've been the villain the whole time. Like, mother, we know. We saw your face. It's clear as day. Like, you just killed it. That's a horrible twist. Yeah, we know you're the evil mastermind, all right? We know.
And then, Edwin, what do you think about the twists just in general? What do you think about movie twists? Do you like when they happen in cinema?
What are your thoughts? I love it, but when they come unexpectedly, like, oh my god, this like changes everything. But sometimes when a twist happens, it kind of kills it for me. Like, oh no, that happened. Oh, bummer. But another example of a twist that happened is Shutter Island. That was a major one. I didn't see a mile away, and that kind of ruined it for me. Like, oh my god, he's actually a patient in that island this whole time, and I actually thought he was a cop, and I really was rooting for him to get the hell out of there or something like that. But nope.
There's this movie trope that people who make movies talk about, a cliche, where you don't want your twist to be it was all a dream. There's the kind of twist where it invalidates everything you saw, and you're like, well, then why did I just spend 2 hours watching this? So when you do a twist, you want it to be the opposite effect. Like you said with Usual Suspects, you want to jump out of your seat and have the whole movie elevated. You don't want to be like, why did you make me watch this for 2 hours if you're going to tell me that none of it mattered?
I'm gonna pop through a few. I won't really sum them up, but I think four movies, many of them, three of them recent, one kind of older. I think Les Diaboliques is a really great twist. And the critical setup of that is it's about a woman who gets hired by her husband's mistress to kill her husband. And that's the only setup you need for that. And then recently, I thought The Mist from Frank Darabont's The Mist has a... I think one of those twists that kind of works either way, because some people have found it very upsetting and they ruin the movie, whereas I found it sort of jaw-dropping. But it's about Thomas Jane. There's a mist that comes to their town, and in the mist are some type of creatures.
Yeah, it's creatures, not pirate ghosts.
I also think Gone Girl. I watched Gone Girl having not read the book, so that movie... its twist is fundamental to the story and character, and I think it's incredibly successful. And Arrival, Denis Villeneuve's Arrival's twist, which sort of takes what you were saying about the idea of the dream and twists it on its head by the twist being something that kind of utilizes that, but in a way that I could have not predicted from 1,000 miles away.
And I think the Arrival twist works because it's integral to the world being saved.
And it makes a rewatch very, hits you emotionally a lot different. I actually think Hot Fuzz, being my favorite movie, has a great twist, because the twist is that all this buildup and who you would think is doing these things is you've been right, but it's not about the things you thought the movie was about. Instead, it's this minute little detail of people. And Hot Fuzz actually plays a lot into Wicker. It has Woodward from
Edward Woodward
from The Wicker Man, but also a lot of its little tropes about this town that sort of exists on its own system are there. And my thoughts on the twist are, I just gave all these recommendations, but I'm someone I don't love to know that a twist is coming in a film, because I think me knowing it, I watch the film with a different set of eyes, which I do that anyway with movies, but when I know that a twist is on the way, then I look for all the details that are going to make that twist more satisfying, or for me to not find it satisfying. So I'm someone who I don't love to know that one's coming. But I think it's a popular, especially like reviews, love to talk about that twist really hits home. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to watch it that way. It doesn't take away from the enjoyment necessarily, but it does change the way I watch it.
Yeah, I think if a movie can't survive being rewatched with a twist, then it's just not a good movie.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And going with Connor's Serenity, I wrote this down before Secret Movie Club was for the public. Secret Movie Club was my friends, and we would try to get movies no one had seen that would blow minds. And so you wouldn't show Jaws. And I showed I Know Who Killed Me, starring Lindsay Lohan from 2007. And if you've never seen this movie, it's a nutso film, which is why I wanted to show it, where there's a serial killer who's stealing girls. You see Lindsay Lohan get stolen, then she reappears as a stripper with amnesia, and the parents are convinced that this is the same girl. She just has PTSD from being with the serial killer, and she's just convinced herself she's another person. Well, twist, twins, y'all. But not only is it twins, but the parents have lied to each other, and the original mother was a crack addict, and the dad ran away with the good Lindsay Lohan, and the stripper Lindsay Lohan was kept down with the crack addict mom. And then at the end, the stripper Lindsay Lohan digs the good Lindsay Lohan out of a glass coffin. She's just about to die, but she solves the murder and she's able to save her, and then they're reunited as twins. Also, the stripper Lindsay Lohan suffers stigmata from the wounds of the other Lindsay Lohan. So she begins to like piece together what's happening to the other Lindsay Lohan from what's happening to her. It's literally a mind slapping film. And when I showed it to my friends, you get a lot of people who are like, why are we watching this? And then you get people who look at you with a beer in their hand and they're like, right on. I Know Who Killed Me. It's not a good movie,
But if you want to see a movie that will blow your mind, see it.
Is that not a sequel to Parent Trap?
It is. That's the other twist. It's produced by Disney. No, it's not the sequel to Parent Trap.
Nope, that would have been a hell of a sequel.
But Parent Trap is great because that twist is given away at the beginning. That's a first act twist. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. The other movie I want to mention is, some people might say this is a cheat. I hope they won't. I actually wrote about Rashomon, Akira Kurosawa's Rashomon, because the twist actually is a twist of worldview. So anybody who knows about Rashomon, and most people do, I highly recommend you see it. This is just a world classic, one of the great movies of all time. Akira Kurosawa co-wrote and directed this movie about a crime that happens in the woods in 8th century Japan between a samurai, his wife, and a thief. And then they all tell their versions of the story in a court trial, and their versions are all wildly different. And you think that the movie is building up to this really pessimistic point about everybody lies, everybody has their own take on events, no one tells the truth, everybody just, you know, operates their whole life from what's subjectively beneficial for them. And then the very last scene has an even more devastating reveal where a character you thought you could trust, who was observing the crime, has also lied a bit because he's poor and he's stolen something, and another character catches him in the lie. But then there's this beautiful bait, there's this moment where a baby is discovered where they've been telling the stories, and the Buddhist priest just feels that the world, like, what can I believe in? Like, these parents have abandoned this baby. And the woodcutter, who was one of the people who lied, says, I'm going to redeem myself by actually taking the baby home. And my wife and I are going to take care of this baby. And suddenly the Buddhist priest's faith in humanity is restored. And the woodcutter is able to redeem himself by doing a good deed. And I would call that a twist of worldview, where you thought the movie was going to make a really pessimistic point or dark point, and actually ends up making this beautiful point about how we can redeem ourselves even in the toughest of times. And I think that's the hardest twist to pull off. Unless somebody take me on and say, well, that was never done again. Actually, if you like Eric Rohmer, there's an amazing movie called Love in the Afternoon, which I'm not going to spoil the twist, but it does a final twist where a character redeems themselves at the moment you don't think they could redeem themselves. And it's like just overpowering in its beauty. So in terms of twists, I agree with what was just said. I love twists, but I actually find more times than not, I remember the twist and not the movie. So for me, I think the twist works best when you can see the movie again and again and again and again and again. So my criteria for a twist is that the movie is even better when you know the twist. That's what's got to happen. You got to be able to go back and watch the movie and love it. Pop culture final thoughts.
I watched Paul Thomas Anderson's Junoon, I believe it's pronounced.
Was it? I haven't seen it.
It's great. I was really hard to find for a long time, but it's streaming on Mubi right now. And it's about an hour long. Yeah, so it's about Johnny Greenwood going to Rajasthan to perform with a bunch of local Indian musicians. There's no talking heads. It's just camera flowing as they work in all these different environments to create the music. And a lot of it's kind of just a lot of basically music videos. And it's a very like visceral experience. Not like anything I've seen from PTA, but also makes a lot of sense with his interests and sort of how he focuses in on people and character. Because a lot of the focus isn't on instruments, it's more on the people and how their expression of their art and their music. And it's really beautiful, and I recommend it. Outside of that, I started a video game called The Last of Us Part 2, and it makes me feel very bad.
There you go. Anything you want to plug?
There's a new Tom Hanks movie on Apple TV Plus called Greyhound, about the Greyhound
bus
ship. I genuinely thought it was about the bus through most of its pre-production. Tom Hanks is a captain, as he loves to be lately, and he's in a convoy of Allied ships that are going across the Black Pit to deliver supplies to the UK during World War II. And it's, I think it's like 90 minutes, and it is a little thriller, but it's the best parts of it are that it's very much about the strategy and the tactics of it. So there's a little bit of character, not super satisfying in terms of a character study, but a very satisfying dad movie in terms of it is about the logistics of these battles and the way it would work that I find pretty fascinating. And we're going to talk about it on Talking Tom, a Pod Hanks Tomcast in the next week or two.
You know, it's funny. I learned a lot about naval battles from reading one of the Master and Commander books. And then there, I think I did a history thing, a podcast or something. And actually, naval strategy is fascinating.
And most of most Star Trek and Star Wars take a lot of their battle philosophies from naval battles, because with the way no gravity would work is not the same, but similar to the way that you have to use physics when maneuvering ships around in the water during naval warfare.
You know this, I'm sure, that Star Trek Wrath of Khan, the director Nicholas Meyer, knew nothing about sci-fi, but just wrote it as if it was a battle between two enemies during the Napoleonic Wars. And once you know that, you're like, my God, that was like a brilliant take, because Khan and Kirk are like these two captains in the Napoleonic Wars fighting in their ships. It's great.
Well, this would have been a better transition after Last of Us. But speaking of feeling bad, I watched the new season of Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix, and it's very good. But it is very, other than the UFO episode, which is a little lighter, the other episodes are all pretty like devastating. And I would say a couple of the early ones are like chilling. Like, as a horror guy, probably the most freaked out I've been in a long time watching something. The first one and the third one, which is the hotel and then the House of Terror, the French one, those two are so, I want to say what happens in them, but it's so strange. It's bone chilling. I also, speaking of mysteries, come catch a mystery on my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/ConnorCruz. I stream multiplayer games Thursday, single player games Saturday, and I do little Animal Crossing streams Monday through Wednesday mornings. twitch.tv/ConnorCruz.
Edwin, what's your middle name?
Caesar.
Yeah, so when I get angry with you now, I can use your full name. That's a dope middle name, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I'm named after a king, so that's cool, and a monster, so that's awesome for me.
And a pizza.
I was gonna make that joke.
You know, I've been watching movies, man. Saw a Tom Hanks movie, which I did not like because it's the same thing.
What
do you say? As I saw You've Got Mail, which is basically the same thing as Sleepless in Seattle, which is a way better movie. But other than that, I was by your area, Craig. I was in Pasadena a couple nights ago.
Stalking me? What were you doing?
I was looking for goats. And I went to the bridge.
Yeah, the suicide bridge. Colorado Bridge.
Yeah, I went there the other night with some friends, and let's just say things got pretty interesting.
Oh, you got a ghost story?
Yeah, I do.
Tell us.
My friend, we were going to this bridge for quite some time, and I asked, hey, can I come along? So I said, yeah, sure. So I brought my camera with me because, I don't know, want to be sort of a ghostbuster. I went, you know, it was very weird. It was very quiet. It was very fancy white neighborhood, you might say so. And the thing that's really shocked me the most is that it's a playground. It's a park. And thinking to myself, like, dude, people jumped off this thing. And then there's a park here. And, you know, I started taking snapshots, pictures, you know, trying to see if I caught something. I caught some stuff. I caught, like, little white orbs on the camera. I take the same snapshot again, nothing on the next one. Like, oh my God.
My mom's a big believer in those orbs.
I know. It's really scary to get something like that. So as we went down the street more, there's like a little gate to like go more underneath the bridge. So we kind of snuck in, and I was like taunting the ghost, like, hey, come out. Come on out. Scare us. Come on, ghost. Let's go. I'm right here. Take me. And then as something was rattling the bushes, my two friends ran away. Like, where are you going?
It turned out to be a hobo.
There could be someone living there. I wouldn't know, but I didn't see anyone. But it was very strange.
Did you stay or book it?
No, I calmly just walked back up. Like, oh, okay. So that happened. And my head started hurting really badly. Like, I had like a major headache. This hurt in my head.
That's the ghost power.
Hey, man, I got taunted. I got taunted.
No, you don't. No, you don't have to taunt it. But I would just say, Edwin, listen, you don't have to adopt my worldview, obviously. But from where I'm standing, I would not. I find it disrespectful to taunt ghosts. Their lives are. I don't know. Can you find a respectful way to ask them to apparate for you?
If I go back, I'll say, come on out. Don't be afraid. Come on out. Come at me.
Edwin, I support you.
Thank you.
In taunting them. I think sometimes you just got to like Sometimes you just got to go in there and you just got to get things done.
Exactly.
Yeah. If something happens to Edwin, this is recorded. Edwin, I'm telling you, just you're a good guy. I love you. Show some respect for the vast unknown of the undiscovered country of death.
Okay. If I go back, I'll tell him you said that.
Thanks. Okay. But it's still a great story. Thank you, Edwin.
Hey, you're welcome.
And then my pop culture final thoughts, I will just say this. Daniel, I want to thank you guys for our last conversation. I am watching Patterson and loving it. That was a hole, and I needed to see it, so thank you. And then I'm going to watch Super, actually. So, Connor, I haven't yet gotten to it, but I love you guys because you're always making me aware of movies or that maybe slipped through the cracks or I didn't get through, and I really love our conversations because then it's a little sort of fire under my butt to be like, okay, I got to see that movie. So thank you guys. So I'm doing that.
You should watch Falling Down.
Yes, I will have to see eventually because people have been talking about it ever since it came out.
It's a great Schumacher.
That's a whole conversation. But I know a lot of people love Falling Down, and I should see it.
One of my favorite movies of all time.
Okay, well then, Edwin, I'll watch Falling Down for you because I love you. Fair enough?
Yeah, good. You better watch it.
Okay. I'm going to watch Patterson, Super, and Falling Down. And how about I'll report back in a few.
You put Falling Down first.
No, you got one.
And then you watch all those other movies first.
Because I'm already watching Patterson. But I'll figure it out. Everybody, first off, thank you guys. We're heading towards 2,000 downloads. I don't know if I told you guys, and we're actually picking up audience, and I really appreciate that. Thank you. Please write Connor and Secret Movie Club at podcast@secretmovieclub.com if you've got suggestions, how we can improve the format, things you'd like to hear. We want and welcome criticism and constructive thoughts. I want to congratulate all the places of the world that took COVID really seriously and are reopening, and, you know, good on you. I want to say to us here in the United States, we can do this. We can reset here, suffer through another month, and then watch the numbers come down and do the right thing. That can happen. Let's do it. And meanwhile, while everyone's going through this, our thoughts are with you. We really appreciate you spending time with us. And, no editorializing. I just wish everybody the best. We're going to get through this. Let's just do it right and get through it quicker rather than later. And we want to remind you this Saturday, if you've never seen a Hindi cinema Bollywood movie, this one is one of the best. 7:30 p.m., Amar Akbar and Anthony. And you can go to our Eventbrite. You can go to our Facebook. You can go to our website, secretmovieclub.com. Also, I want to thank people for ordering the posters. We keep getting poster orders. We're very grateful. That is helping to fund us. And that's it. So, guys, thank you for talking about the twist. Does anyone have a good twist to end the episode?
We were never here.
We've been ghosts the whole time.
Woo! Yeah, that's right.
Here's a twist, Edwin. If you don't want to watch the movie, you cannot be on the podcast.
Side twist? Watch Wes Anderson's The Darjeeling Limited.
Edwin, ooh, that is not comparable.
The Darjeeling Limited, and also I've seen it.
Yeah, watching Wes Anderson's Darjeeling Limited is not a substitute for watching a movie actually made by Indians in India.
It's set in India. It's got Indian music, man. Okay, come on.
It's literally not.
Come on, let me have this.
Yeah, Secret Movie Club audience, we are separating ourselves.
We apologize. We are distancing ourselves.
But Edwin, listen, we love you. You are going to watch. Look, I'm going to end this positively. Twist, Edwin is going to watch Amar Akbar and Anthony. Edwin, you're going to do it. You're going to come prepared next Monday, and we are all going to applaud at the start. That is a future prediction. Stay tuned for Secret Movie Club Podcast 20 to find out if that comes true. In the meantime, guys, have a great week. Let's get these drive-ins going, and we wish everybody a great week. Guys, have a great week. Take care, everybody.
Bye. Bye.